Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just wanted to listen to a little Rush here on a Friday afternoon, taking you into the weekend, trying to figure out what's going on with the working men and women of this country. The jobs report came in a lot lighter. So what's underneath all that? Let's bring in our old friend, Chris Liu. He's senior fellow at the University of Virginia Miller Center. Go Cavaliers. He's also the former Deputy Secretary of Labor under President Obama. He joins us on the phone from Virginia. So, Chris, those headlines start crossing this morning. What's your first thought?
Well, my first thought is what I used to always say, which is, you know, 1 month, we need just to be careful. It's not a trend. That being said, this was a low number. And I think when you look at not only this month's number, but the revisions of the previous two numbers, which took off 75,000 jobs, you definitely get more evidence of a slowing economy. You put all that on top of retail sales, factory orders, lower growth for second quarter, and there's a sense things are slowing down. And so it certainly poses a challenge for the president as he's engaging in this this battle on tariffs with Mexico and China and other countries as to how much of a headwind that's going to create for a slowing economy.
How do you handicap the U.S.-China trade negotiations that are going on? Do you see it as posturing? Do you see it as each of them needing to kind of save face a little bit and that ultimately they understand, meaning the U.S. and the China, have to come to terms on some kind of deal?
Well, look, I assume everyone's a rational actor. They understand that in a global economy, trade is an important thing. The challenge right now is that both sides have really kind of, you know, drawn their battle lines pretty carefully, clearly on this. And a lot of the issues that the president raising are legitimate issues, whether it deals with intellectual property protection or access to the Chinese market. Rightfully, there's skepticism about whether any concessions that are made by China will be codified into law. That being said, the people that are ultimately suffering are, you know, U.S. farmers that can't ship their products in there, U.S. manufacturers that rely on Chinese materials for their products. And so, yes, you would assume in a rational world that two sides could work this out. But given where the rhetoric is right now and where the battle lines have been drawn, this might take a while.
But it's not just rational, right, Chris? Because you've got a president who's facing a re-election, and it's all about the economy. We know that. And in China, you know, you've got people, you know, and China has deep pockets that they can certainly put subsidies and benefits and so on and so on things to prop up the economy. But they certainly don't want a population too that's unhappy, you know. So I'm just, you know, there's those kind of pressures on them as well.
Well, you know, it's exactly right. I mean, all this needs to be framed through the domestic politics, particularly as we go into a presidential election year. The president has made a decision that his base will stick with him even if they suffer some temporary or increasingly longer now economic harm, because they like the tough position that he's taking, and he thinks he can ride that out. The question becomes, if this posturing ends up hurting the overall U.S. economy, whether he starts to lose some of that base. You know, so far you see a little bit of a fraying, and they've obviously been trying to make this up with the bailouts to the farmers. And you're right, China actually, in a controlled economy, has the ability to shift things around. Obviously, they have greater control over their currency, so they can offset some of this. But this is not good for either country.
So, Chris, let's talk a little bit about wages. Also, a point of disappointment, it felt like. So I want to start there, but I also want to make sure we talk about the minimum wage discussion, because that has really come to the fore this week as well, especially after that Walmart annual meeting. So let's talk about today and then talk about the broader wage discussion.
Right. So today's wage number was disappointing as well. It was I think year over year, 3.1%, which, you know, again, is good. It's not great, though. And I think particularly when you're looking at 3.6% unemployment, you would assume in a tightening labor market that wages would be rising much faster than that. The other interesting thing about this is the labor force participation numbers, which really have not budged over the last, you know, since I've been doing this, last 5 or 10 years. And so it suggests that people really are not coming off the sidelines right now into this economy. So more broadly, though, I'm glad you mentioned the federal minimum wage. Next Sunday, we celebrate a pretty unfortunate milestone. It will be the longest period of time between minimum wage increases in U.S. history.
Wow.
The last time it was raised was July of 2009. So we've gone almost 10 years without a minimum wage increase, and it's still stuck at $7.25 an hour on the federal level.
So what do we do? Why isn't this? Yeah, I mean, it's got to move up substantially, correct? At this point.
Well, it does. You know, we can have a broader argument about whether, you know, $15 is the right wage or not. But if you simply indexed the minimum wage from 1968 to now, it gets you at about $12 an hour. And in particular, when you have large companies, Walmart, Amazon, McDonald's, that have all said we support a federal minimum wage increase, it does beg the question why Washington can't get around to solving this problem. Fortunately, states are taking action. 29 states, the District of Columbia, all have higher state minimum wages. But it still means that millions of people are being left behind, largely in southern states right now, which tie their state minimum wages to the federal wage.
When you talk to people in Washington, either former colleagues, former rivals, maybe, Chris, mm-hmm. do you feel like there is any sort of momentum around minimum wage? Certainly, we're hearing it from the C-suite, but it doesn't feel like we're hearing too much from policymakers, or am I wrong?
You know, I don't. I don't as well. I mean, right now, House Democrats are struggling to come up with their own proposal. There's been some concern that $15, which is really where the Democratic Party is, might be too high, and whether they ought to come up with some kind of, you know, bifurcated or regional wage levels. It is worth noting that in the 80 years that we've had a federal minimum wage, it's basically a nationwide standard.
Yeah.
And we can have an argument about whether 15 is too high for certain states in the South, but obviously where you all are in New York, 15 is a little too low right now. So we have a standard, and, you know, businesses adjust, and the minimum wage has gone up, I believe, 28 times over the last 80 years under both Democratic and Republican presidents. So this shouldn't be a partisan issue, but unfortunately everything in Washington is partisan.
Certainly feels that way these days. Chris Liu, Senior Fellow at University of Virginia Miller Center.
Just eat it. Eat it. Just eat it. Just eat it.
Nice.
Just eat it.
We are talking about Beyond Meat. Shares rallying to record high after the company's inaugural earnings report impressed the street. Better than expected annual outlook. Also, leaving some room maybe for this stock to go even higher. You'll get me funny.
No, I just know you're going to use my line. Beyond meat, it's beyond me.
I like
very
that.
Very proud of that.
I think I'm going to put that out on Twitter.
Yeah.
Dina Schenker is consumer reporter at Bloomberg News. She is today at the Plant-Based World Expo at the Javits Center in New York City. She joins us on the phone from there. Great to have you here. Beyond meat up 35% as we speak. How appropriate that this is the expo you're at. First of all, tell us about where you are, because it sounds like this is not just a few company thing, but it's a lot more than that.
Hi, thanks for having me. And yes, there are so many companies here, and they are making so many different kinds of meatless meat. I started writing some of them down. I tried a Reuben sandwich with seitan corned beef, and it was honestly, it was delicious. I tried a pork protein type thing that is actually sold to sausage companies, that real sausage companies put in their sausage. And a lot of the time people don't even notice. There's Good Catch. They make plant-based fish types of food. There's Light Life. They're a staple of the vegan diet. Companies I've never heard of, like Abbott's Butcher, their premium chorizo type product was smoky and I thought very tasty.
So Dina,
I could just keep reading from the list. There were so many.
So it sounds like Beyond Meat is onto something, right? So let's talk about a little bit about the quarter. What stood out for you?
So the big news was their revenue, which beat the analyst estimates, and I think was probably the main reason that that we all are watching this stock just jump super high. But aside from the financials and the release, there were some really interesting things that came out during the call. The number one thing I thought was really interesting was that CEO Ethan Brown said that they're ready for the big QSR national fast food chain order when it comes. Like, they'll be ready for it. And of course, the one everyone is thinking about is McDonald's, but Brown didn't, you know, specify that they're sitting there waiting for McDonald's. But especially as their rival Impossible Burger is dealing with shortages, Beyond is saying, bring on the business.
Yeah. And I mean, is anyone out there worried that this valuation is getting a little crazy?
There are a lot of short sellers that are saying that, but there seems to be more enthusiasm for the brand than there is doubts about it. But really, I think a lot of people recognize that this is a lot of uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And there's no way to say for sure.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of short sellers, too, either had to do some short covering or just are feeling a lot of pain on the run-up that we saw in the stock today. I don't know. You know, we look at the space. We talk about it. We understand, you know, the food space is definitely evolving. I do wonder, though, Dina, you know, does Beyond Meat have to be nervous about some of the big food companies that are out there that can throw a lot of money into something very quickly and all of a sudden become the major player in any given space?
So the first answer to that is, you know, they're all competing against meat. They're not necessarily competing against each other. And so there's plenty of room to compete in that sense. The second part of the answer is Beyond Meat does have an early mover advantage. They are a name that is becoming more and more well-known. They've also been working on this for a really long time, which is what Ethan Brown, CEO, talks about, like, their maniacal focus on innovation. And it's true, they're constantly working on making a better and better product. Of course, you know, hard to say what it will be like when Tyson comes out with something, and Tyson has all the customers, it has the distribution channels, it has the manufacturing capacity. So I think that's an open question.
Right. Well, we'll let you get back to trying all those interesting things. Really, I can't wait to read the story that outlines all of these different products, because certainly we're hearing more and more about this. And I would imagine that Beyond Meat's performance is really going to give some ballast to a lot of these companies and give some investors a reason to get behind it. Dina Shanker is consumer reporter for Bloomberg. She joined us on the phone. She's across town in New York City at the Plant-Based World Expo, where certainly Beyond Meat, Carol, is the buzz.
Was it pastrami she mentioned right off the
pastrami
bat?
Pastrami and sausage and some sort of pork situation.
pork situation.
Pork protein situation.
Excuse me, people. We have a pork situation.
We have a pork situation here. And spoiler alert, it's not actually pork.
I know.
It's just amazing.
I haven't really tried any of this stuff, so now I'm feeling like I need to
sample a little bit. I've tried an Impossible Burger. It's good. It's definitely good. Charlie Pellet was talking about how he, you know, he tried one on the street. You know, he's good for, like, someone handing him something to eat. And he's good for that, right? right, Charlie?
Did I tell you who paid for it?
Who?
Our friends at The Economist. They were at a street fair.
You'll take a meatless burger from anybody, Charlie.
Are you saying we should replace the ice cream upstairs with meatless burgers?
I don't know about. I'm sure that. Right. Well, who knows? But it was pretty good. It was really pretty good.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow. Did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann. Let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
It's been a slow journey from the inside. All right, definitely one of my favorite pieces in the magazine this week by one of our favorite writers, I'm not going to lie. You know, it's hard to pick among them, but Peter Coy
makes me think
really
every time
stands out. Every time we come into the studio with him, we really learn something. Of course, he's not in the studio with us today because he's partying up in Ithaca at his college reunion at Cornell. I bet you're all talking about the 10 years of growth that the U.S. economy is celebrating, right, Peter?
Has not been a big topic of conversation.
Joel Weber, I should mention, is also here with us in our Interactive Brokers studio. But, Peter, I want to start with you because you really set the table so nicely with this piece because you talk about how there hasn't been a lot of celebration, even as we approach a really important milestone for this economic recovery.
Yeah, well, we reached the milestone this month because in June 2009, the economy hit its very bottom, the bottom of the Great Recession. And ever since then, we've been crawling slowly back. I should probably emphasize the word slowly here because it has been sort of like Lonesome George, the Galapagos turtle, tortoise that just kind of clumped along with never really overheating, but never really impressing anybody with its speed either. So it's been 10 years, and that means it's tied for the longest expansion in U.S. history and records going back to 1854. And that's why you would think people would be partying, because again so slowly, they're actually not so happy. Plus, they're worried that, hey, maybe it's going to end soon.
So Peter, when you were working on this, what did you discover that you didn't already know?
I knew that, obviously, the reason we did it was that we knew it was tying for the longest, but I hadn't really realized how slow it was. So the record that this ties was 1991 to 2001. So that lasted a long time, and yet the growth was much more vigorous back then. It was the GDP, gross domestic product, cumulatively grew over those 10 years, or the first 39 quarters of that period, by 43% versus only 22% this time. So, that, you know, twice as fast. So, you know, that's pretty disappointing.
And so, Peter, one of the things that really comes to the fore in your piece is you name check and actually speak to some very important economists, not the least of which is Larry Summers, used to run a place called Harvard, worked in the government, Treasury Secretary, all that. He's got some very specific thoughts about what's been going on and why we may be in the position we're in.
Yeah, so Larry Summers was there at the beginning of this expansion. He was President Obama's director of the National Economic Council, and he was one of the people who was agitating for more and stronger action to get the economy growing faster, you know, more fiscal stimulus. And he's still saying today that more can be done. He thinks it would be folly for the Fed to even think of raising rates, and he's actually in favor of cutting rates, you know, not waiting, but cutting now. And that's because he believes the U.S. is in a case of so-called secular stagnation, which is a phrase that goes back to the Great Depression in the 1930s. That's a case where the economy will not grow on its own without sort of emergency aid from the fiscal and monetary side.
So, you know, it's a Friday here when anybody can walk into the studio, including...
Not just anybody.
Editor of our economics section, Christina Lindblad, for the magazine, and she's here in our studio as well. You know, we do think about, you know, Peter's story, how many stories you guys are covering. We're looking at what's going on, you know, in terms of economic growth. And some of these developed nations, they're having a tough time getting more growth out of the economy. And it speaks certainly to Peter's story, but we look at it really kind of around the globe.
Well, and that, you know, the section we tried to do as a takeover on this topic, right? U.S. is at this moment, but what about everybody else? So, Christina, like when you looked at how to put that perspective together, what else did you decide to include?
Well, we wanted to look at Australia, which even Jay Powell has noted, you know, why people would ask him, like, how long can it go on? And he said, well, there's Australia. It's on almost 28 years, which if it gets there, it will surpass the Netherlands, which also had a 20-year growth streak. So I think even though we would say that overall maybe growth was disappointing in this 10-year run compared to previous ones, certainly other countries in Europe would have loved to have what we had over
That's
the last
a good
10
point.
Years.
Yeah, I agree with Christina that and Larry Summers, in fact, would make that point. He said, yeah, the U.S. does have secular stagnation, but if you want to see real secular stagnation, go to Japan or Western Europe.
And what about David Blanchard? Where does he enter into all of this, Peter?
Yeah, he goes by Danny. David Blanchflower was on he's a Dartmouth College professor. He's a Brit, and he used to be on the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England. And he's a dove, so that means he likes low interest rates. He
believes, he's a dove. You say that with such venom there, Peter.
No.
He's a dove.
It's really a label. He's a dove, and he believes that when we say the unemployment rate is low, which it is, 3.6%, again, this latest month, and that ties to the 50-year low. That's good, except that it's not a true measure of how much slack there is in the economy. That is to say, it doesn't really reflect how many people are willing to work, because it doesn't count all the people who are sort of out of the labor force because, you know, maybe they got too pessimistic or are working part-time when they would prefer to work full-time. You said if you measure underemployment, then you would see that helps explain why wages have been so low, because there's still sort of this reserve army of the underemployed.
Well, and the thing is, I think also interesting your story, Peter, is that you point out that, you know, there have been other growth cycles that have lasted a long time without being this slow. It doesn't have to be this way.
Right. That's what I was referring to before about the 91 to 2001, which was the sole record holder until it was tied by this one. So now we all want to know, Joel asked me, hey, why are we doing this story now? Shouldn't we really wait till July? And, you know, maybe we'll have to come back and write about it again in July.
The editor said no.
I was just going to say, what's the conversation?
The staff said no, now's the moment. So, Peter, I also want to, I think I want to institute a Friday trophy for perhaps the best kicker of the week in Business Week. You quoted Blanchflower, actually.
Yeah.
With that quote sends shivers down my spine every time I read it. And he was referring to a John Maynard Keynes quote.
Right.
Can you quote that one off the top of your head by chance? I'm
joking. I can paraphrase it, which is that Keynes said you can get into a position of what he called a semi-slump. That's where you've gotten past the worst of your downturn, but you haven't really gotten into a robust recovery. You sort of creep along, and that seems a pretty good description of what this recovery has looked like for most of its 10-year life. And he said there are ways to overcome a semi-slump, but right. they require strong leadership, people who are really willing to step up and take strong action.
Okay.
And the implication, of course, is that maybe we're not doing that, and that's what sends shivers up Blanchflower's spine.
All right, take that to the Hamptons this weekend, everybody. Joel Weber, editor of Bloomberg Businessweek, Peter Coy, economics editor of the magazine, and Christina Lindblad, editor of the economics section. We've had a party on this Friday. Check out, though, the magazine. Great read, and a lot online as well.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
It is time for the Drive to the Close. We've just got a few minutes left in today's trading session. Melda Mergen is Deputy Global Head of Equities at Columbia Threadneedle Investments. Threadneedle Investments. Let me say it again. Joining us on the phone from Boston. Melda, nice to have you here. You know, it's interesting. I was just kind of adding up what the major equity averages have done this week. It's been quite a bullish week for equities. We're talking about 4% higher on the NASDAQ, up almost 5% on the Dow, up about 4.6% on the S&P 500. What does this week's trade tell you about the equity universe?
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here first. I think definitely there is the signal from the stock market, a relief, I would say, with the expectations of Fed is not going to be tightening anymore or even higher probability of a cut. So that's really what is, I think, the signaling stock market. That being said, there are still a lot of headline risks in the marketplace that we are watching very closely.
And how would you rank those headline risks? Because some of them we've been living with for quite some time, i.e., or e.g., U.S., China. Some are a little newer and uncertain, e.g., U.S., Mexico. How do you rank them?
I think from a headline risk point of view, definitely the trade conflicts are very important, and there are high expectations for the G20 meeting that's going to take place in terms of probably solving some of those conflicts. Other than that, I would say the second half of the year will be all about domestically the election campaign, the primaries, and that's going to be very important too.
You know, I want to go back to something you said about the equity universe. I'm just curious, you know, why are equities celebrating, considering if they anticipate, as you said, a lower rate environment? I get that. Everybody's going to be pushed to seek yield and, you know, you'll move into equities and other places and riskier assets, if you will. But why are the equity markets celebrating if what we're saying is things are not going so well? The economy continues to maybe slow down, possibly a recession. The Fed is going to need to cut rates in order to help out the economic environment. Why would investors rally on that?
I would say last year, with starting the tightening, created this fear that it would continue. And in 2018, the second half, we start seeing the first signs of slowdown. So our expectation was for the U.S. economy to slow in 2019. Again, some of the speeches from Fed was still hawkish, although the signs were starting to surface. So investors were very concerned about it. So I think this correction tells you that once the investors start hearing Fed to be more cautious and not necessarily jumping into a rate hike is the reason for this type of celebration. But it doesn't take away some of the, again, headlines and expected slowdown in the economy.
So, Melda, what do you think the Fed should do at this point? You see a lot of the same data as you look ahead to the next few months. What would you need to see to get behind a cut, or what would you need to see to essentially just stay put here?
I would say, again, our expectation is not an immediate cut. Fed usually waits to see more trends in the data to make a decision in policy change, so it's not the expectation, but definitely not rising the interest rates is a welcomed outcome. Again, there are some uncertainties in the global market, and I want to make that distinction. I believe U.S. economy is strong. We're not expecting any recession, but stock market reflects more of the global growth risk because even in S&P 500, the companies are global, so they will have that impact in the earnings. So in that sense, not tightening is a welcomed outcome for us.
You know, Milt, I also do wonder if people are overreacting. I feel like sentiment swings very, very quickly. If you just take a look at December and then, you know, early part of 2019, and then we rallied big time back and then we fell apart again. So I do feel like investor sentiment can move very, very quickly here. And I think, you know, once we maybe resolve some of these macro issues, maybe we'll figure out what the real longer term trend is. And that could be up or down.
Yes, I agree with that. Sentiment really goes swings from one end to another. That's where hopefully institutional investors are a little bit calmer and looking at the fundamentals. So I would say it is a lot of information flow, news flow coming to the investors. But when you look at the fundamentals, definitely there are some risk in play, but a lot of fundamentals, especially in U.S. economy, is still very strong.
So let's just cut to the chase. The June Fed meeting, do you think that the Fed will ultimately cut rates after this jobs report or maybe give it another couple of months?
I would say would give a couple of months.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Mel DeMergen is Deputy Global Head of Equities for Columbia Threadneedle Investments, joining us on the phone from Boston at the end of a week, Carol Masser, where we've seen quite a rally. A lot of green on the screen this week.
I was kind of shocked. I've kind of been watching throughout the week how much of a bounce back that we've been getting, but it's pretty substantial, and I guess it makes sense. And certainly after a ton of Fed speakers, or Mike McKee had been talking to them all week at that Chicago Fed conference and event, and you know, to have Jay Powell come out and basically say not necessarily that he's going to cut rates, but he's watching things, and he's watching trade specifically to see the pressures it puts on the economy. That jobs report may be, you know, evidence number one, and we'll see if we start to get more signs of some weakness in the economy as a result of the trade war that we're going through. You know, we'll have to see where it goes.
Right. Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.